and welcome to my hearth.
This particular episode needs a slight introduction, just to speak a little bit about how I looked when I was little. The first point is that I was very small. I think I've already told you that I wasn't 5 foot until I was 16, but before I went to primary school, I was really tiny, to the point that my parents were quite concerned about me and at one point took me to the doctor to see if there was anything wrong. Moreover, in terms of my colouring, I had inherited my mother's side of the family, in that I had white blonde hair and rather strange coloured eyes. They are blue but with flecks of grey in them. When my hair did change to its adult colour, it had a cast of red in it, the same as my mother. This was probably from the Irish, Scandinavian, Viking part of the family. I didn't really understand the total impact of my look, except that I knew that I was very popular with old ladies. Remember in the 50s, when everybody went out shopping, I carried the bags occasionally. My mum would be accosted by old ladies who would say things like, "Isn't your little boy beautiful?" Or even more frequently, "He looks like an angel." Yes, did they but know? I am sure it would seem odd now, but it didn't then, that occasionally I would get a kiss or even a sweetie. Now, the result of this obsession with my cherubic looks meant that when I was at the bus stop, which we were quite frequently, I would often entertain the ladies, whether they wanted it or not. Even before I went to school, I had a repertoire of songs that were based on the records that we had at home. One of my father's favourites was South Pacific, and I would give a great rendition of Cock-Eyed Optimist. Except that in my version, apparently, I sang Cock-Eyed Octopus. These mini concerts that I gave drove my mum into slight despair, and often she would hide in the bus shelter and pretend that she wasn't related to me. It wasn't so bad when we were in the village, because everybody knew who I was. But when we were coming back from the town, I would literally be doing these numbers to complete strangers, and that's where I think my mum did the most hiding. I didn't need any excuses to visit my faithful fans in the village, who would always want a song. For the singing of Christmas carols, I was in great demand amongst my following. Mr. Long's, my favourite shop, because that's why I read all the books, had a kind of large boat which was used to collect money for the lifeboat. I think that is the charity that he decided upon because we were a river community. And at one point I did go out with this boat to collect money for the lifeboat, which involved, of course, a lot of singing. I like to think I was so persistent that people gave money so that I would go away. Now, I don't know what had been the catalyst for it, but at one point it was decided that my legs were not as strong as they should be. The powers that be decided that they needed building up and strengthening in some way, because they were concerned. Remember that this is a time where things like polio were around, and actually someone in the village had caught it. Outside one of the other shops, we had a sort of model of a little blonde girl who had a caliper on her leg, and again a collecting box for victims of polio. Now, our village hall, which was rather good, had a stage attached to it. And at one point, and I'm not sure quite when it was, a lady came and started giving dancing lessons. She was known as Miss Elizabeth, and she did all the teaching. And there was another lady called Miss Myrna, who did all the administration, including collecting the money for the lessons and keeping the registers and generally keeping us all in check while we were waiting. As all of my friends would tell you, I took to it like a duck to water. I was particularly good at tap and also at ballet and a thing called stage branch. Quite quickly, my legs did start to strengthen and I got quite good at dancing. I couldn't know at that time that in later life I would work with a couple of the best choreographers in the world, Gillian Gregory, whose work included Me and My Girl, and Gillian Lynn, who of course is famous for Cats. And they created some roles on me. Hindsight is an amazing thing, but I do remember that as I was getting older, I was thinking that it might be really good to become that kind of entertainer who did singing and dancing. However, there was a kind of pull in between entertainment and education. It wasn't my parents, but in fact myself, that wondered whether I would get as good a set of lessons at dance school in terms of education as if I went to another school. When I was little, I was relatively very bright. However, because of the way my parents had been brought up, they had decided that they would not interfere with anything that my sister and I wanted to do. And I think if I had persisted with the idea of becoming some kind of entertainer, they would not have stood in my way. However, at that early age, I stood in my way, and I only pursued dancing until I left primary school. However, up until that point, I'd done quite well. I'd been in festivals, I'd done lots of exams. I was told that had I gone for it, I would probably have done it. However, like a lot of periods of my life, it became one of my strings to my bow and not my main objective. My Aunt Chris made my costumes. My old ladies formed the basis of my fan club. Now at primary school, we had a very talented headmaster who was called Mr. Hardy, and he was very good at helping us sing. He thought that it was a very good discipline. Not only did it develop teamwork, but it developed your ear and your concentration and also gave you an outlet for just joy. In the late 50s and early 60s, group activities were always encouraged. I think it's quite sad nowadays that there are not so many of these around and that lots of children spend quite a bit of time on their own. Remember, everything at that time was based on community, whether it was going to church or going to school or joining clubs, things like the Scouts and the Boys Brigade and all sorts of things meant that people did things together. In our village, we feasted together, we sailed together, and we sang together. There was a sense of community that went across the ages. Looking back on it, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that at a pre-primary level, I was already spending time with older people. My loyal fans. When I did the dance festivals, they were, of course, in bigger towns. It gave me a double outlet because, especially with the stage branch things, you had to sing and dance in those particular numbers. I'm sure my father, who secretly, I think, would have quite liked me to be something like a chartered accountant, was always a little bit concerned about entertainers, but I know he was very proud of the performance side of my life, as well as just being pleased that I was academically gifted. He certainly understood that mixture of academia and art because of the mixture of skills that his own father, William Crispin Harris, had had. His amazing brain obviously needed the outlet of painting to help him get through life. I've already told you that my mother's side of the family consisted of people who were natural-born entertainers. Everybody did a turn, and everybody had their own specific routine. I think in my own head, it was a balance as well between being rather shy in certain circumstances, and I am certain that that is because I was so tiny, but in other areas, I was rather forthcoming. Because I was also obsessed with storytelling, I was very good at telling stories myself. And I'm sure that the whole thing fits together in a way that we don't always understand. Now, one of the chief people in my fan club of little old ladies was the most delightful and gorgeous person called Miss Groom. To be honest, I couldn't tell you her first name. I don't know if I ever heard it, because we always called her Miss Groom, even when we were with her. She lived in one of my favourite bungalows, which looked like a fairy tale cottage. She was related to the ballet dancer Beryl Gray, who went on to run a national company. Miss Groom had all the sensitivities of a real lady at that particular time. Like everyone, she always checked before she left the house that she looked presentable. This involved the tiniest application of face powder and, of course, a hat. All the ladies of the village had a variety of hats. Now, for the boating community, these involve things that would protect you from the sun and the wind and the waves. And in the winter, of course, it would be something woolly and close-fitting. Miss Groom's hats tended to be of the straw variety in summer and something velveteen in the winter. I can still see her now in her little cottage, pouring out cups of tea, with, of course, perfectly matching teapot, cups and saucers and side plates, and something delicious for a nibble, including a biscuit. I notice that in the modern world, sometimes on the television people say, please do check on your elderly neighbours. We didn't need to be told that in the village, because I think we probably checked on them every single day, and I think because of me needing to entertain them and feeling that they needed an extra song, I'll perhaps go round twice. More of village life in the next episode.